Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we discuss the 2023 crop season. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hey, Jay.
How's David and Vicki doing this morning?
Doing the best.
I'm doing good. Doing good as far as I can tell.
Everybody recover from our trip to Louisville last week?
Absolutely. It was a good Farm Bureau convention, and we got some new leadership in place, and Vicki's County came out on top on the leadership deal for sure. But some new folks, first and second vice president, so you know, it should be a small transition time there, but I suspect it'll go really good, and you know, everything will work out really good.
You know, the Kentucky Farm Bureau Federation has a long history of having just exemplary leadership from all across the state, and I don't think that'll change now.
No.
I don't either.
I think Eddie's done a really good job up until this point, and I think he'll. As he takes the helm, I think it'll be really good for all of Farm Bureau.
Absolutely. I do too, and Eddie's going to be a really good mentor to the two new ones to the executive committee, and with that first and second vice, both of those being new to that executive committee, and having that Eddie's been on there now for 15 plus years, and just having that knowledge, and you know, of course, he was mentored. You know, as he was coming up, and I think that's the good thing about organizations, particularly Farm Bureau, is they really seem to do a good job with preparing, you know, the leadership for what's to come, and making sure they're trained up and to know how to handle situations, and they keep them well educated on issues. And I mean, I just think they do a really good job. They've got a really good group of staff there that do a fantastic job, and looking forward to see.
Yeah, not discounting the contributions that Mr. Haney has made for the last 15 years. He's done a fantastic job, and we certainly appreciate all of his leadership throughout all those years. And while we were up there, we did have an opportunity to talk to a lot of the Farm Bureau folks. They've got a lot of new folks in the commodity groups, and actually got to talk to those folks. Renee Laurent's kind of in the head of that, and we're going to try to get her on the program and two or three of those folks and do some discussions about some of the different commodity groups that they're heading up. And, you know, we really look forward to that. So should be, you know, throughout the year, and the new leadership team. I'm looking forward to talking with some of those folks. And,
me too.
I think it'll be a really good year next year when we can get some of those folks on.
Yeah, I had mentioned Vicki just here the other day. Shane Wiseman, of course, who is this new first vice president. He and I were in college together at the same time there at Eastern Kentucky University, and I think he'd make a great addition to this show. We need to see one of our trips up that way. We need to see if we can't get him
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
While we was at Louisville, I was able to visit with our newly elected Commissioner of Agriculture, Jonathan Schell. I got to sit down and talk to him for just a little bit. I kind of crashed. He was eating his supper, and I saw him, so I just went over and sat down and joined him and talked to him a little bit. And looking forward to trying to get him on here and on the podcast, too, and just kind of talk to him about what he's, you know, things that he's thinking about as he's taking on this new role, and you know, lots of changes. But you know, if you don't ever change, you're going to start going backwards too. Mm-hmm. So you know, sometimes it's hard to think about change, but that's how we grow. That's where growth happens, is when you know, we make some changes. Not discounting anything that was done behind them. It's just we're looking forward to getting some new things scheduled for the podcast this year, and starting off 2024 and planning and bringing some good stuff to you.
Well, you touched on it there, and I think that's right. Nobody wants to change. Everybody talks about not liking change, but we all want to grow.
That's right.
And to grow, you have to change. You have to adapt, and you have to basically morph into whatever you need to do to face the issues that are coming in the future. So
yeah. That's right.
It's nobody that hates change any worse than I do. So.
It is. I mean, you know, it is. Change is hard. And, you know, we work with farmers every day, day in and day out. And, you know, it's hard to make, even on the farming side, it's hard to make changes. It's hard to do things differently than the way you've always done it. Yeah. And oftentimes when you're bringing another generation in to the farming operation, you know, be it full-time partner or whether it's just bringing them in a little at a time, you know, sometimes that's some of those growing pains that these farm families have to go through, because you have that older generation that has been doing this for a long time, and they've got all that knowledge, and this is the way we've always done it. And then you've got that younger generation coming in, and they've got some other thoughts and ideas of maybe how to do it, maybe thinking it would be more efficient or save some money or whatever. And it's sometimes there's some growing pains, you know, with that, but it's a necessity.
Yeah, and you know, and we talked about it with lots of people. We actually had our podcast had a booth at the trade show at the Farm Bureau Convention, and we got to talk with a lot of listeners.
Yeah.
You know, we want to say thank you for listening, for sure. But absolutely, we got to talk to a lot of those folks and discuss ways to improve our podcast. And we're always looking for ways to improve our podcast, whether it be guests or different things. So, you know, we may make some changes to the podcast but for sure we're going to have some different guests and some new folks on, and you know, but we're always looking. If you have suggestions, well, be sure to send those to us. We'd love to hear from you, whether it's on your podcasting platform. There's opportunities to comment. We'd love to read those comments, and if there's ways we can improve, we would love to do that.
Absolutely. Glad you brought that up, David.
You know, talking about change, one of the things that has remained the same over the past two falls, and I think we're going to do the same thing again here today, is we have had a follow-up show to that particular crop year. It's hard to believe that this is the third time we've had that conversation.
It is.
It really is, yeah.
But one of the things that changes is seasons change. And we're to that late fall, early winter time of the year, and it's time to start looking back on the 2023 crop, evaluating the successes and maybe the things that we could have done differently, and seeing how we can implement those into next year's cropping season. So who wants to go first talking about the 2023 year?
I'll jump in there.
we all have something to say for sure.
Well, 2023 was certainly a different year.
Challenge.
It was. It had some challenges, and there was challenges throughout the season, and and we have challenges each year. We know that, but this year it just seemed like, and it was a lot of challenges, not necessarily all in the same place, but when you start looking through, particularly West Kentucky, because that's where we are, we are just more aware and know of those things. But throughout the state, there was so many challenges. But you know, going back to that planting season, it was a really nice spring. We had really good planting conditions. Folks got the crops in early, and things was just seemed to be, you know, moving along smoothly, and what you like to see. But then, you know, somewhere around that second week of May, first week of May, that was the first big challenge that we got here in Webster County, when we got that 7 to 10 inches of rain, depending on where you were. And that really set our folks back a little bit, because you've had these good planting conditions. So we had several acres planted, but when you get 7 inches of rain, 10 inches of rain, it's
not good.
It's not good. And you know, you're going to have some replant.
Yep.
And so we had a larger acreage of replant in this county this year than we've had in several years. Wow. When you talk about total acres, you have replant acres every year, but not to the extent that it was this year. And so that was the first struggle.
Yeah, and I think that was probably held true for all of us and a lot of Western Kentucky. And even, you know, and I'm not talking about replanting twice, I'm talking about three times, you know, in some places, you know, just depending on where you were. And I think that that translated into harvest, and throughout the summer, things coming off at different times, you know, that just kind of pushed that harvest that much further down the road,
yep,
as well.
David and I have both, we've agreed upon this all summer long, it seems like, but especially it the later we got into the year, the more pronounced it was. We really had, with corn especially, we had three crops.
Yep.
We had a planted crop, we had a replanted crop, then we had a second replanted crop.
Right.
And really, depending on where you were and what type of moisture you had throughout the year, that middle crop probably well outdid the first crop, mm-hmm. and the second replant
might
come close to standing with the first replant.
Yep.
Both of them outdid the early corn.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because when we got that first 7-inch rain, mm-hmm. and when we got back in the field, it was the last week of May. So we had yep. worked all April. And then you said 3 weeks you couldn't get in. But just when you'd think, oh, it's going to be dry enough, I might be able to get in if we get another rain. Mm-hmm. But it was about 3 weeks. And so then we got in that last of May and replanted. I mean, they started replanting and got it replanted quick.
Yep.
And that was the best corn here.
Mm-hmm.
The mm-hmm. that late planted, replanted corn out yielded the early.
Yep.
Part of that, I think, is one, it had that stress of that all that water. You didn't replant mm-hmm. it, but it put it under stress.
Sure.
Then it got really dry. After we finally got in, it got really dry.
We had a little spell there, if y'all remember. We had a little spell that was pretty dry, and I kept thinking, hay's not going to be very good.
Yep.
The pasture is starting to dry up. We're going to have to start feeding hay already. This is going to be really bad this summer. And, of course, that, I can't remember when in June that snapped, but, I mean, we started getting some rains mm-hmm. around here locally. I think Central Kentucky got hit a lot worse than we did.
Right.
But, yep. you know, in our local area, we actually did start getting a few rains that helped out with that for sure.
Yeah. It this year's crop, it had water stress both ways, too much and not enough.
Not enough, yep.
And some places had that multiple times mm-hmm. throughout the growing season.
You go back early enough when our growing season first began, when planting started, it had some cold stress. I can think of some beans, David, you and me talked about them all through
right.
the summer.
Yeah.
That got in through a pretty good freeze that we just knew was gone, and they wasn't gone.
Yeah.
They made it and looked like they made pretty good. Watching
yep.
that crop, I don't know how it yielded, but watching that crop along the road there looked pretty well fine, looked pretty well stress-free, actually,
yeah.
for a good
yeah.
long while.
It looked really good, and, you know, I saw a lot of things that I've never seen before this year, to be honest with
right.
you. I mean, those beans were one of them.
Right.
I mean, when I'm not talking about a freeze, I'm talking about a freeze now,
yeah.
And those beans survived. You know, they had just come up, and, you know, they survived.
They
and,
had popped up out of the ground maybe an inch to 2 inches,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't like a 32-degree freeze.
Yeah.
It was like a 26-degree
yeah.
freeze.
Yeah.
For a couple of hours or more.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I saw that, and then I also saw some of the worst corn I've ever seen anywhere there in McLean County. Well, no, actually, it was in Hopkins County going across the bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
On
the other side of Jewel City there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that all happened this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we've had, and they would, you know, folks went in and tried to replant in some places that corn was still standing, and that kind of made things awkward from a standpoint of when you were going to put your fungicide on, if you were going to put any fungicide
mm-hmm.
on. You know, you've got two different plants there that needed the fungicide at two different times, and so what do you do there? So that caused some issues, and then the same thing with drying down, so the corn that was there to begin with probably was really, really dry,
yes.
and then
right.
the other corn was probably still a little bit wet because it took it forever to dry down, especially if you put fungicide on it.
That's exactly right, because there was corn here. I had farmers this year, and my brother was one of them, that his late planted corn was not drying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just wasn't. So he had a break there in the middle where he had got his his dry out of the field, and he couldn't. I mean, the weather conditions were fine to be in
right.
the field, but the corn was too wet.
Yep.
So, you know, that was kind of ironic too, because then he was starting to do things then that you normally don't do till the harvest is over.
Right.
So, I mean, he had plenty of things to do, but it was just different in that he, you still had corn, you know, standing in the field and driving. Even when we, you drive up to E-Town, you'd mentioned E-Town, you know, there was crop in the field, standing in the field a lot longer this year than I've seen in recent years anyway.
I noticed even coming back from Louisville, there's still some corn out a couple of different places.
I saw that too.
One of the things I think, and a lot of people get caught in this trap with replanting, is they've booked their seed, they have to get whatever seeds available, and a lot of times it's not necessarily a shorter maturing variety like should be replanted. You're later in the game, you should have something that falls in there close to that, and it ends up being a longer maturing variety than what you need for that particular date. And that we've seen it even in fields that the whole fields aren't replanted. You're just replanting part of the field, and you can see those variations. Once one crop starts drying down and another's still green and growing, you can see those pretty drastically.
And, you know, the bad part is most of the time we don't have any choice.
You get what you can get.
Right. You're just hoping you can get something or anything, to be quite honest with you. You know, so you really don't pay a lot of attention to maturity dates. But, you know, I think our folks manage that pretty good from the standpoint of being able to get in there and get it done. And and for the most part, I think the crop is out, for the most part, especially hopefully by the time this airs, all of the crop. Because we've, in the when we're recording this, we've got a pretty good 4 or 5 days here that's pretty dry. So hopefully folks will be able to get in there and get the rest of that out.
And, you know, I think what complicated, we're talking about the variety on the replant, is in any given year, somebody's going to have some replant. But what complicated it this year is there were several producers need to replant, and then each producer had several acres. It wasn't a farm or a field. It was 300, 500, 600 acres that needed to be replanted. I think that complicated the whole system.
It wasn't a 120-acre bottom that just one farmer had. It was,
like I said, acres. You get whatever you can
get.
You get whatever.
And then we had another challenge this summer. We had a hailstorm come through over around Providence. And, I mean, it just ripped some corn. I mean, ripped it up. And so you have another challenge on that.
Did you ever hear what that yielded, Vicki? I mean, did you have any idea?
No. You know, I talked to him yesterday, ran into him yesterday, and we talked about the storm coming through. But what we were talking about is that his house obviously got terrible damage too, and they are just now, right now, starting to work on it. And that's what we were talking about, and I should have asked him. But. You know, it just, you don't have that every year either.
That's right.
You know, I think this year, to me, it just seemed like you either were getting no rain or you were getting 7, 8, 10, 12 inches and in a storm. I mean,
and that happened all summer, to be honest with you, because, you know, you look at the spring or May there when we had all that. Then a little bit later on, Murray, down in that western, you know, western Kentucky, they had, 10, 11 inches?
Yeah, late.
Late down there. And then you come, Jay's, my neck of the woods, we had 5 to 7 inches, 8 inches or whatever, and one, like 6, 7 hours at one time.
And that was in August, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in the latter part of August, which doesn't happen hardly at all. You know, we just don't hardly ever get that much rain that late.
I was actually going out of town when that rain, when that rain came, and my wife was sending me pictures of how it all came at once.
I feel like we was at the state fair.
We were. I was. I was at the state fair. It was the second week.
Well, this was just a little later than that. Actually, the end of August was one I was thinking of. I was on my way out west, and she was texting me pictures of water in the basement. So you could imagine how happy she was. I was out of town, and she was dealing
well,
with that.
David's wife was feeding, and because he was out of town, so I don't think she was real excited either.
She's not very happy. Which is normally what is something always happens when I go out of town. It just, I mean, that's just the way it is. And we had something happen when we went to Louisville to Farm Bureau convention. My stepson was feeding and we had a calf bloat. Luckily he saw it and we got a hold of somebody and they came and put the tubed him and, he's fine now, but I mean, had he not been paying attention, you know, so it's always something that farm folks will understand this. Nothing happens until you go out of town.
That's right.
And when you go out of town, something will happen every time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, talking about the replant, Hopkins County, we always raise just a little bit of grain sorghum, milo. Mm-hmm. And one of the innovative ways I guess some producers dealt with their replanting this year is they just upped their milo acres mm-hmm. rather than going yeah. back and replanting corn, especially on some of the land that was reclaimed mine land that we mm-hmm. deal with. A little bit, you know, tendency to be drier anyway and doesn't support corn like it should have, especially later planted corn. Yep. And so we had quite a few more acres of milo this yeah. year than what we typically do. And
I know you cut some plots on some milo. You cut several soybean plots, I think, too, Jay.
Soybean yeah. plots. But Vicki and I both did some NCGA mm-hmm. plots this year mm-hmm. with corn yeah. growers. I did some in Webster County. She did some in Hopkins County. we were both out of town. And, that you know, that aside from everything else, that's what makes mm-hmm. it nice when you have coworkers that you work yep. closely oh, with. Yeah. You can yeah. step in for one another. She's yeah. come to my county and done that a few times, and I've come to her yep. county and done that a few times.
That's
and
right.
Cut a wheat plot last year over here in her county yep. when it was about yep. 136 degrees.
I think it was I think it was one of the hottest days, actually.
It was pretty hot.
Yeah. Well, we actually in McLean County had the highest yielding wheat plot, 145 bushels.
Congratulations.
I saw that. Oh, yeah. That was a pretty neat kind of deal. That was I was not able to cut that plot. I was out of town, but Troy Muse over there with Davis County Young Farmers, he yeah. came and cut it for us. So
he does a lot of plot work all around that area.
He does.
A lot,
he really
a lot
does.
More over in Davis County, mm-hmm. too, I
he
think.
Does, but he does a good bit in McLean County. The folks have got to where they call him pretty regular, and which, of course, he lives there, mm-hmm. Which makes things a little more convenient. It is not near as convenient for me to be there at some times that when folks are cutting. So, mm-hmm. You know, he's happily to throw in and help, and so we've got some good folks around our close to help us with that.
And, you know, a lot of producers don't take part in those yield contests. I enjoy them. I've always liked doing them. I like helping producers doing them, the ones that like doing them. But it's a good chance to get out, get in the field with a producer. You see things, or he can point things out to you that you don't necessarily get to see from the road. And I've always enjoyed doing them, whether it's corn or soybeans or for this year, milo. It's mm-hmm. first milo yeah. plots I've ever cut.
Yeah, I've cut one milo plot. That's it. And yeah. so I always have milo in Webster County too. We typically have it over there where our counties come together there, over yeah. there on the Green River area over there. We get into that Karnak soil mm-hmm. and that's a lot of those producers over there have that in a rotation over there. And we have a little bit on the other side of the county too, over by the Tradewater River, but not a lot. But it is a good crop though to be able to come in, and if you've already got your nitrogen down for corn, if you've already got some corn chemical down, it is a nice crop that you can come in there and plant if it gets too late. But you have to be careful with that too, because you can get into issues with milo not drying down too.
Right.
So that can be an issue too. But
one of the plots that I cut this year, one of the two, was in that area where you're talking about yep. where our counties come together. The other one was actually more towards the south central part of Hopkins County, down around White Plains. They actually came in and killed that plot.
Yeah.
About 10 days before we cut it.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to grow milo on any amount whatsoever, that'd be the only way I'd do it.
Yeah, I've got farmers do that too.
It cut clean. There was not a lot of dust. It was a really good crop.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, well, switching gears a little bit, we've talked, you know, all about grain crops, but pasture and hay ground, we've had a kind of a challenging mm-hmm. year on the hay deal for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, the early hay was not near as good as yeah. we would have liked. But, you know, folks did end up getting a second cutting even after, you know, some dry times. And the folks I've talked to said second cutting was probably a little bit better than the first.
Yeah, that's what mine said too.
I wonder quality-wise, only a test will show that. I certainly mm-hmm. think yield-wise that yep. second cutting was a little bit better than the first. I know there at my home it was.
Yep, yep. Yeah, it was a good bit more on ours, you know, and some fields were the same. You know, so it wasn't a lot of difference in some fields, but then other fields it was much different. So, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, from my standpoint, it just, you know, whether it was water or whether it was fertility or what the
I was going to say, what really do you attribute it to? I've got some ideas. One of the thoughts I've had, of course, most of our hay fields, we're talking about a cool season type grass, fescue, the vast majority of it, some orchard grass. But we had a longer, more extended spring, which I don't know how much temperature-wise that helped that, but it seemed like on into the spring we were cooler and cloudier than we are a lot of times of the year. So I don't know if it just helped it hang on growing a little longer.
Or, yeah, that seems to me, that seems like when you have those cool springs like that, the grass just doesn't seem to grow like it, you know, normally does. And, you know, that's kind of the way a lot of the old timers, that's what they used to tell me. And, you know, I figure they've got a lot more experience at it than I do. But, you know, like that second cutting, I could think of a field that I'm thinking about right now. It actually only missed making the same by about a couple of rows. Mm-hmm. And you always feel like that first cutting is always going to be the biggest cut.
Right.
You know, so, you know, whether that be clover production or Lespediza or whatever the situation was, Johnson grass, you know, that seems to be anymore, you know, that's probably some of our better hay, you know, and we just need to get it cut better. Most people let it go too long, you know, before they cut it, but can make absolutely really good hay. But we just, you know, everybody's, you just get to doing so much other stuff, it's hard to get it all done at one time.
Well, and you're fighting weather too. I mean, you're fighting because, and I think this year probably you had some challenges, you know, our livestock folks had some challenges of, of being able to get that hay cut and not getting it wet because we did have periods of drought. Well, when you're in drought, it's really not growing. And, you know, but then it's like, then you're trying to get it cut and then you get 7 inches of rain or the
first cutting one didn't seem like it was a big deal to try to get enough dry days put together there that you could get it cut. But after that, you know, for the rest of the summer, it was a challenge, you know, at different times. We either didn't have enough rain to make it grow, or then it would start raining and it wouldn't quit.
It wouldn't quit.
You know, it'd rain like every day, every other two or three days, and you couldn't put enough dry days together to get it cut in a timely fashion.
That's right, because there was some weeks this summer that it didn't. It rained every day. It may not rain a lot every day, but it rained
enough to mess
every day.
You up for if
and
you were
overcast.
Doing, hey. Yep,
overcast for whole weeks. Yep. You know, and that
and the problem we get into when we have this Johnson grass in our hay fields is that we've got to have some good drying weather to get that put up in a form that we can put in a barn or if we can put under cover or whatever. I mean, it needs to be dry. Mm-hmm. And so far, my best guess is, regardless of whether you cut it with a conditioner or cut it with a disc mower or whatever, about 4 days is a safe, if you're going to try to put it in the barn, 4 days is a minimum.
And that can be a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any year, I'd say.
3 days just doesn't seem to be enough. There's always some green spots and some wet, seems like to me. And we have a lot more trouble with that hay molding and doing some different things like that. And especially if you're trying to put it inside, you know, you a minimum of 4 days and then, you know, and then go from there. So
I did have some producers tell me this year, but now this was when it had gotten a little hotter and drier. We was more in that drought that the hay was super dry, like too much on the other side.
Right.
That, I mean, you could almost cut it and bale it. I mean, it was just, and that's obviously from those drought conditions, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
So sometimes we forget that the livestock folks have those same challenges that our grain producers
that's
do.
Right.
Because, and you know, that just goes with, that's just like any other thing. Whatever you do, that's what you're comfortable in, that's what you think about, that's what you pay attention to.
Right.
But we do forget about and the other sector that we forget about is those folks that we have that are growing vegetables and our orchards and those folks, they have some huge challenges too. And even though that's not traditional agriculture like our livestock and our grain crops is, but it is still a part of that agricultural production. And those folks had some real challenges too. this year.
Yep. You know, if you wanted to learn more about that, I'd encourage folks to go back to listen to the podcast we did with Mr. Mark Haney.
Yes.
I probably learned as much about apple orchards that day and peach
that
orchards
was a good one.
As I have learned the entire time I've been in extension. And I mean, that's just because he does it every day.
Yep.
And, you know, so if you want to know more about that, you know, be sure to jump back. And,
absolutely.
But yeah, I think, Vicki, you're right. I think the challenges that they have are just as serious as the challenges that our grain producers and livestock folks have.
You know, if you, and I had the chance years back when I was in Christian County, I worked with a lot of vegetable producers just because we had a lot of vegetable production there. It was probably, input-wise, closer to tobacco production than just about any other crop that you dealt with.
And labor.
Very labor-intensive and very input-intensive. Mm-hmm. If you were growing steak tomatoes, if you were growing pumpkins, if you were growing any kind of melons, you better be on some type of regular preventative fungicide program. And that's something we haven't covered a whole lot of that maybe we need to do some a little bit in the future, just because it is a growing segment of our population.
It is.
We've done some shows on home gardening, but as far as commercial vegetable goes, we've seen a lot of it come and go. The ones that are there now are the ones that are in it, I feel like, for the long haul. Mm-hmm. They've made it. They're traditional producers now at this point.
Well, and I think the increase in people wanting to buy at farmers markets has helped that along with folks that are raising a little more of that type of thing because they have an outlet to sell it. Right. I mean, it's, you know, vegetables and produce is just like corn, soybeans, or your cattle or whatever. You can raise the best crop in the world. If you don't have somebody to buy it and a place to market it, it's not going to do you any good. Even if you have if you are raising the best of the best, you've got to have a place to market. And I think the farmers market has helped on that side. But, you know, talking about Mark, you know, he said this year was the worst year they've had in the orchard, and it was from a hailstorm that came out and just wiped them out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's huge to an orchard. I mean, that's just, you know, we don't think about those things, but it was just challenging all the way around, I guess we could say. It didn't really matter what the commodity you was raising. It was, you know, it was challenging. But
and, you know, also, you know, when we talk about prices, I think there were some challenges there, regardless of what commodity you want to talk about. You know, there were some times during this last year that prices were really good. And then there are some times, like right now in the cattle business, is pretty tough. I think I calculated the other day that I had, by holding some steers up into last week, I had already lost $200 a head. So, I mean, there's some challenges there that you got to think about. And back a month and a half ago, prices were really good on cattle, especially feeder cattle. So bred heifer prices were really strong. We had the bred heifer sale down there at Guthrie, and it was like $25.50, I think, is what the wholesale average on 210 or 13 head or something like that. And That's pretty good. You know, out west, I heard I was listening to a podcast coming up here today, and, you know, bred heifers out there bringing $3,500, you know. So, I mean, it just depending on where you're at. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, the challenges are there. The cow herd is certainly, you know, not getting any bigger. So, from that standpoint, and cattle producers, there are some challenges, and grain producers as well. You know, we had some really good prices earlier. They fell off, you know, a good bit, probably. But, you know, for the most part throughout the year, they were hanging pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think probably something that saved them a little bit is the yield. Mm-hmm. You know, we had some pretty good yields out there that kind of helped folks, I think, a bunch.
Well, and traditionally we see a little bit of subsidence in grain prices in the fall anyway, because that's when our inventories are the highest.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we don't often see is that particular drop in grain prices and feeder cattle prices at the same time.
Yep.
Usually when one's down, one's up a little bit.
That's right.
So.
Yep. That is right. And I mean, have you researched it, talked to anybody? What caused that drop in that cattle market?
Cattle on feed report came out.
I was going to say
what it was.
Because it came, I'm not right on the radar with that kind of thing, but I wasn't expecting that quick drop. And I mean,
well, the cattle on feed report came out and kind of goes back to what Jay's talking about. This is our normal time of year. Folks are selling their calves, especially if our spring calving cows, the market is flooded. The feeder cattle market is a little bit flooded right now, just because this is the normal time that people sell, kind of like corn. You know, in the fall, when everybody starts shelling corn, price usually goes down, or it used to.
Sure.
It's not near like that as it used to be anymore. Sure. But I think the cattle, that's part of it. I think there's two things there together.
Well, you know, you're talking about that cattle on feed report. We had the crop acres report that came out from USDA said this was going to be one of the biggest corn crops we'd ever looked at.
Yep.
And that was about the tipping point. So, I mean, what it shows is how much speculation really has to do with setting our prices nowadays as to the actual use of the crop. We don't see as wide a swings as what we used to, but we still see those speculators change their intentions whenever those reports come out.
Yeah, I think there's more speculators in the market now than there used to be.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's more people doing that than, because there's so many other things that affect the prices, whether you're talking about livestock or you're talking about grain.
Well,
they don't have anything. You know, you've got the outside influences of things that are going on around the world, and then you've got the speculators who are banking on something else happening or not happening, and they're kind of playing both sides of the market. Mm-hmm. So it's
an inventory. I mean, taking that guess on what the inventory is.
And that's a guess. It's a guess.
It's a guess. It's a
close.
Yeah.
I mean, they get pretty close, but it's still a guess.
It is.
I think you've got a couple of things going on there with the speculators. For one thing, both sides of our markets with regards to grain, both producers and those end consumers who are processing that grain are working in the futures markets to help offset whatever their cost and whatever their sales are going to be at their particular time. So they're speculating on that just as well, but they're doing it as a risk mitigation. Basically, they're going to make it on paper or they're going to make it in their actual crop, one of the two.
Yep.
And, but as far as just actual speculators, I think you're exactly right. Folks that have nothing to do with either of those producers or consumers speculating just as a place to park money. And when you look at what interest rates have been, it's probably one of the more stable places to park money.
Yeah, it really is. And that's, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah.
So,
well, it just goes to prove that for folks that out there that are listening that may not be actively farming, there's a lot
gambling.
I mean, really, there is, and there is so much more to a farming operation, be it a livestock operation, a grain production, tobacco, or fruits and vegetables. There is so much to that, to farming, that does not involve equipment, driving a tractor, planting, harvesting, spreading fertilizer. There is a lot of that too. But there is a lot to farm and a lot of decisions that have to be made that you have no control over things. You have no control over the weather. You have no control over the market. You can do these risk management type things, and you can do some forward marketing. You can do some things on farm storage, these bred heifer sales or these other specialty sales where you're grouping like cattle to hopefully get a better price for years when you're grouping them to getting those truck loads. Those are things that you can do to try to capture some more money and to help on that aspect. But you're making a lot of decisions and having to do a lot of planning and on things that could change in just overnight almost. And so, you know, I've always said I have a lot of respect for farmers because they are so much more than just planting and harvesting a crop.
And folks need to take this opportunity to look back at 2023 and look at the things that worked for you. Look at the things that you could have mitigated. Maybe you could have done a better job at managing a certain aspect or maybe you should have put a fungicide on, or maybe you shouldn't have put a fungicide on, you know. go back and look at the decisions you made in 2023, and let's see if we can improve on that. Let's see if we can, you know, did we in this situation, did we need to make a different decision than what we made? You know, it's time right now, and right now is a good time to do that, is to go back and look at those decisions and see what we could do better.
Yeah, because you may have a really good variety. It just wasn't planted in the right conditions.
Oh, yeah, the right time.
Maybe a variety that does really good early planted, but it does not do well if it's planted later or vice versa. And really looking and seeing, you know, what could have been different. You know, was it environmental that you couldn't control, or was it maybe if I'd went with a different variety, or if I'd done something different, you know.
You know, we've preached for the whole time the show's been going on, best I remember, is, you know, we're talking about having a plan A and then maybe have a plan B and a plan C. You know, right now is the time to work those out. And, you know, and if this happens, I'm going to do this. If this happens, I'm going to do this. You know, have those triggers in there that get you to make that decision now. And then you have that trigger, and then you know exactly what you're going to do. Or you're going to try to do anyway.
We have talked about that ever since we started this show. One of the things we probably need to impress upon people more is the need to make notes and to keep adequate records. Absolutely. Because having that note on paper is what's going to give you the ability at the end of the year to go back and evaluate what worked and what didn't. Yeah. Remembering what you saw and when you saw it, I don't know about you, it gets harder for me as I get a little older.
I can't hardly remember what happened yesterday.
Exactly.
Well, and two on that too, Jay, is when you have several years of notes that you can go back and see that, you know, I'm starting to notice that in every, you know, if you're in a corn soybean rotation, that every year this corn is, or these beans, whatever, that yield's just dropping off a little every year. Well, something's going on.
I think that
is. And let's look and see. Let's start digging in here and process of elimination and figure out what's going on.
I think that is exactly right, Vicki. I think having multiple years of notes will allow you to look at more trends. I said this years ago when we started talking about variable rate technology and soil sampling on the grid. Having 1 year of that information and how it related to your yields, you really didn't have a whole lot. It took 3 or 4 or 5 years of you really seeing trends of how those trends played out and what worked and what didn't. And of course we see what that's turned into today, and it stuck. It worked.
Yeah. You know, and we were looking at some soil tests before the show started and some different practices that this producer is doing differently. You know, I think it's still going to take 3 or 4 more years of data to really figure that out, but really promising, you know, results, but, you know, from a fertility standpoint, but, you know, it's one of those deals we're just going to have to see and keep good notes and the practices that are being utilized on that operation. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think it's really good information. It's good discussion for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of those plans talking about in this particular operation that David was mentioning about those soil tests, sometimes it causes you to think about, well, now what am I going to do different? Because it's like we may be going too high on a fertility standpoint when you're talking about fertility. So you need to know that too. Mm-hmm. You need to know that information too, so you can start making a little bit of different changes and maybe start cutting hay off of this field, you know, instead of it being a pasture field or whatever the case may be. But just really having that information to really look at and make decisions on and make changes is really it can make you money or save you money.
Yep.
You know.
Definitely.
Either way
it affects your bottom line. That's right. And we talked a little bit about that before the show. We always like to wrap things up with a timely tip, and we felt like this week's timely tip would be for producers to take a look at those notes, take a look at the records. Look for ways to improve your financial outlook for 2024, whether we're thinking, you know, that the market might be in an uptick or whether it's in a downtick. There's ways that you can actually capture some of that value that you've put into your operation already. So make those opportunities to look for ways to improve their financial outlook, whether it's by making more money or possibly by saving some money somewhere.
That's absolutely. And I think we can we could learn so much if we'd actually do that. You know, mm-hmm. That's the challenge. You know, when you think about it, the challenge is actually sitting down and doing it, making those decisions and looking at that information and making the best decision for operations. So,
in a year like this, one thing that comes to mind is these folks that don't have on-farm storage and had to leave that crop standing in the field this year. And thankfully it stood. I mean, some years that corn wouldn't stand that well that long. This year it did. But maybe one thing that coming out of a year like this, maybe look at your options as far as maybe is there another farming operation that you could be able to be able to maybe work with them on getting some corn dried if this were to happen again, just things like that. Just be thinking about out of the box a little bit about planning for the next year.
We've talked about this before. We've hardly ever do we do a show that we don't run across some idea that maybe, you know, maybe that'd be a good topic to talk about. And maybe sometime or another, we ought to sit down and talk in depth about the topic of on-farm storage and what it means for an operation. Time was, it just meant a place for you to store some corn so that you could sell it later in the year so that you didn't have to sit in line at the elevator. And I think really, if you apply that to the amount of acres that a lot of producers have nowadays, it's as much of a harvest aid as anything. It keeps you from sitting in line and tying up your trucks at the elevator and keeps your combines and grain carts running. So,
well, anymore, we folks have got so much. We've got harvest efficiency is so important.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's something you need to look at.
Vicki's talking about these crops that have had to stand out longer in the field. Think about all those years when we had a late season hurricane or some type of disturbance in the Gulf. And
you didn't have any way to dry your corn.
Ended up with high winds and flat corn. I can remember going to St. Louis one time, going across the I-64 through that part of Illinois, and the corn looked like it had been steamrolled. I mean, it was just, you couldn't have got it any flatter. Nobody wants that late in the year after you've tied up all your eggs in one basket.
And a couple of years ago, the tops of corn started breaking out. Well, when them tops start breaking out, you know, it can cause some issues.
You know, it's like you said, you know, whether you need to look at on-farm storage, you may need to look at a dryer. You know, you may need to look at feed storage if you're a livestock producer. Yeah. Feed storage where you can buy in higher volumes and save yourself money that way. But those are some things to look at, you know, here at the end of the year and try to get it all wrapped up.
Yeah, so that's good.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to wind it up. We want to say a special thanks to our hosts for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.